in every reader's life when you get a book and you're totally don't know what to expect from it. You know, I read across genres, as most of you know who listen to the show. I'm a voracious reader, but I was given a book called The Night Visitors by author Carol Goodman, and it was unlike anything I had read before. She is an international best-selling author. She is a Mary Higgins Clark award-winning author. She has won tons of other literary and poetry accolades. I'm very excited to welcome to the show author Carol Goodman. Carol, welcome here, and thank you so much for being my guest today.
Well, Pam, thank you so much for having me. It's so wonderful to hear a reader talk about how much they love reading, and
I
love the book too.
I loved your book. You know, when I was researching you, I loved the first line in your bio, which said that you started writing at age 9 when your teacher introduced you to the topic of creative writing. Who knew that at 9 you were in a creative writing class? But you wrote a 90-page crayon-illustrated collection entitled The Adventures of the Magical Herd, where you lived with a herd of magical horses. What a brilliant thing for a child of 9 years old to do.
I'm still
and 90
looking for
pages
that herd.
Do you
do
you have that book that you wrote from
I
when
do.
You were a kid?
I absolutely still have it. It's in a folder. And it's the crayon is a little bit faded. I took it out the other day because somebody wanted me to bring it to a panel. And I looked at it and I was like, oh, I think if I take this out of the house, it'll just fall to pieces. It's so old. But I still have it. And I know that it's not often that you know, like, the moment that something begins. And I absolutely know that when I started writing those stories and I invented this world and just, you know, set myself in it, that was it. That's what I wanted to do for the rest of my life.
Oh, Carol, I think you should publish this as a children's book. I really do. I think that if you publish this little, well, not little, you know, let's face it, 90 pages for a 9-year-old.
Yes.
But that's okay. And, you know, I bet you anything, you would motivate other kids and parents of children to get their kids to read and write too. I had a guest on not too long ago, Bradley Charbonneau, who talks about writing books with his children and why it's important to do that. And when I read this about you, I thought, this is the reason parents write books with their kids. Because, you know, obviously you saw it in yourself, but someone also said to you, hey, you know, continue writing. And so you did. Tell me your story.
I think
story.
It's such an important – well, thank you. And I think you're so right. I think that, you know, giving children a means of expressing themselves is so vitally important, whether it's through writing or art or dance. Just,
music.
You know, something to do with the emotions. And so, you know, since then – I mean, it's been a long journey since I was 9. I knew I wanted to be a writer, but it took some time to figure out how to do that in the world, and but I just kept doing it and eventually published my first book when I was about 40, and I've published about 20 books since then. So I just can't seem to stop. It's it's given me so much satisfaction.
It's in your DNA. It's cellular at this point with you. You know, so you said that during your teens, you wrote poetry, and I think every literary fiction writer that I've spoken to, especially women, and a lot of men too, say they go through that angsty period in their teens, and they want to write poetry, and, you know, whether it's, you know, your hormones are blooming and you're talking about boys or girls or love or, you know, growing up, whatever it happens to be. However, you were awarded the Young Poet of Long Island Award. So this is really this is your life. Writing mm-hmm. words are your life. And then you took a break from writing to go mm-hmm. to Vassar and major in Latin. Is there a reason you chose Latin?
Well, you know, I think it was because all that time I spent writing poetry, I really was just fascinated with language, and I wanted to go, I had this idea I could go back to the root of language and I would understand it better. Also, I think I was just a little bit contrary, and the normal thing would have been for me to be an English major, and I was
sure.
like, no, I'm going to do something different. So I majored in Latin, and I did love studying Latin, and eventually, and it ended up being coming back around to my writing, because my first book that I published is about a Latin teacher.
You know, it's funny, when I think about Latin, I think the only people I know who are familiar with Latin are Catholics and lawyers. And so, because, you know, when I was growing
yep.
up and went to Catholic school, you learn the Mass and a whole lot of other things in Latin. And, of course, I mm-hmm. think that even law students still studied Latin, because so many of their verbiage is in Latin.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fascinating to me. So your book was called The Lake of Dead Languages. That was published
yes.
by Ballantyne. And that's where
right.
you found your Latin came into use, correct?
Yes, yes. I hadn't taught for a number of years when I wrote the book, but I went back to the idea of this Latin teacher who has gone to work at a boarding school that she had gone to. And in order to write the book, I had to take out my old Latin books and
wow.
And use them and resurrect my Latin. So it was a lot of fun. And it was something about that period of learning Latin that I thought evoked a certain mood and a certain time that would be interesting to explore.
So I love this. I love the fact that you studied Latin, and I love that your first book was so critically acclaimed, probably mm-hmm. unlike anything else. You write literary fiction until you didn't. So mm-hmm. the first thing I want to mention is upstate New York is kind of a character for you, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely it is.
Tell me why.
Well, you know, I went to college in upstate New York in the Hudson Valley, but then I moved on. I lived in New York City. I lived in Texas. I lived in Colorado. I went
goodness.
Back to Long Island. So when I started these books that were set in the Hudson Valley, I wasn't living up here, but there was something about the Hudson Valley where I felt like it was my imaginative home, and that it was a place of myth and mystery, and that I could place my little fictional boarding school or my little fictional town in between all the real places in the Hudson Valley. After all, it's where Rip Van Winkle fell asleep for 20 years. So
right.
it has that feeling of that you could sort of slip into one of the misty folds of the mountains and, you know, there could be a whole other world. So for me, it was my imaginative home. And once I started setting books here, I just kept doing it. I mean, I took a break and set some books in Italy just for the fun of having some research and a nice trip.
Absolutely.
But then I found myself coming back, and eventually I found myself moving here. So about 9 years ago, once my daughter graduated high school, I moved up here. And I sort of wondered, you know, gee, now that I'm living here, will I still be fascinated with writing about it? And in fact, I would walk around and go like, wow, this is really beautiful and incredible here. And these other books came pouring out of me, River Road and The Widow's House, all set very close to where I'm living now in the Hudson Valley.
Wow. So you lived on Long Island while you were raising Maggie, who is your daughter, right?
Mm-hmm.
You wrote five more books, and you were nominated for Impact. You also...
Mm-hmm.
Were nominated for Mary Higgins Clark. You won the Hammett
mm-hmm.
Prize for Literary Excellence. This is obviously, you are in the place where you are destined to be. So
mm-hmm.
I find it very interesting, though, that you detoured a little bit from this literary fiction mysteries
mm-hmm.
and and you started writing fantasy and YA and a little bit of paranormal, which is so in my wheelhouse right now. I'm so enjoying reading urban fantasy and you know, kind of science fiction-y and young adult. Mm-hmm. I just enjoy it all. Why did you make that turn? What do you think happened?
Yeah, so I just love fantasy. I've always loved fantasy since I was, a young girl reading
obviously
the Narnia books and reading Tolkien. Grew up with it, and then when I was raising my daughter Maggie, I was sharing all of those books with her. At some point, after I'd written 7 mystery suspense novels, I realized that I just wanted to do something different, that I needed to just go off into a different type of writing. And I loved fantasy, and I had always been using mythology and fairy tales as leitmotifs in the books. So for me, the idea of suddenly writing a book where the fairies might be real was not such a huge departure. To me, it felt like the natural progression. Not everyone felt that way. It was a natural progression. But I just, I wanted to explore that. And that's just what I wanted to write. So I did, and my editor went along with that for the first the fantasy series I wrote under the pseudonym Juliet Dark. And I wrote those, and then my husband and I decided we wanted to write a series of fantasy books. So we wrote the Watchtower trilogy under the name Lee Carroll. His name's Lee. And I just wanted to write YA. So I just really, I just kept going and exploring this world of folklore and fairy tale and, writing for young people as well.
It doesn't seem unusual to me because, after all, your first book at 9 years old was in a fantasy genre, mm-hmm. whether you were aware of it or not when you were writing it. And by the by, your husband is a poet also, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. He is. Lee Slonimski. Yes.
How wonderful.
He has published 6 books now, yes.
So the ALA, and for those who don't know, that's the American Library Association, also raved about the Blythewood series. And that is your one that's set on the Hudson River. Again, your inspiration, right?
Yeah, yes, yes. I went back. Blythewood is set. It starts in New York City in 1911, but then the characters move up to the Hudson Valley to a girls' boarding school. That I based a little bit on a mansion not far from where I'm living called Blythewood, spelled with an I instead of a Y, but a beautiful, a magical place. So then I wrote that series about these girls at this boarding school and exploring also all this history of the 1911 through 1914 and World War I.
It's amazing to me how many stories you have in you that have come from your love of one particular part of the country. And that's not an unusual thing, but it's just that you've done it with so many different types of storytelling. And the Hudson Valley seems to be your muse almost. I could be wrong, but it feels like that.
It does. And just when I think that, I probably have written all the stories I could hear. Something, I see something, I see a different town, or I sort of imagine a different, set of characters and lives here, and it just fits. It's a very rich area, and it seems it's been kind to me.
You know, as I look at your Amazon page and I see people just raving about your books, you are a very prolific writer for the type of story that you tell. You are not using tropes that other mysteries or anything else uses. And your books are not small. They are hefty-sized books. You're over 300 pages. But so many people have raved about that, even on the professional reviewers from PW. And I love what Library Journal said. Mary Higgins Clark Award winner Goodman creeps us out. I love that. It's like the best thing you could say.
I thought that was so great when they said that. I was like, woo. I take it as a compliment.
I think it's wonderful.
That's what I was trying to do. Yes.
I love it. And of course, you know, Lori Raider Day, who herself is a Clark Award winner and just a terrific gal, by the way. She's fabulous. And I love that she blurbed you too. And Booklist said, best read by firelight. So, you know, you've gotten so many accolades for it. When you sit down to write a new book, Carol, are you nervous about, you know, will my audience like it? Will my readers like my new book? Do you still have that kind of writer's anxiety?
Well, I think there's always a sense of, I do have a little sense of nervousness. And actually, I will use this word. I sometimes have this little sense of dread when I sit down to write. And I think it's more about the feeling of what I'm about to delve into or about to expose. And it's not so much at that point, I'm not so much thinking about, well, will the audience like it? I'm thinking about, you know, can I tell this story and can I do justice to the story? A lot of times, when I'll have an idea, I'll think I'll get very excited by it. And then I'm like, you know, can I tell it? Can I do justice to it? And so I always feel this little, every morning when I sit down to write, I feel this little sense of dread is maybe too serious a word, but it is like this little frisson, maybe, like this little chill of like, am I going to be able to do it? And yet I've come to accept that I'm always going to feel that and that I just have to push through it and that maybe I should feel that. It's like I'm crossing a threshold when I go to write and that
that's interesting.
I should and it's appropriate, you know, to have this sort of sense of, almost a sense of reverence, like, okay, now I'm going to try to tell the story as honestly as I can, and, you know, just, you know, here I go.
rather than making an assumption that it's easy and that it will just flow from you, because I somehow feel, even though I'm not a writer, but I'm a reader, I somehow get the sense that writing is certainly a lot more difficult than reading is. And I just wonder, you know, I would love to be inside the head of a writer when they begin and when they end a story. Are you a very disciplined writer? Do you like go to work every day and you sit down at a desk and you write? Do you outline? Do you research? Tell me all about your process.
So, I say this to my students all the time, that I started out not very disciplined at all. In fact, I'd say I started out rather lazy, but what I became is very obsessive about the writing, and that obsession trumps laziness every time. So I guess you would call it disciplined in the sense that almost every day I sit down to write and that I want to write, and then I will write for long hours, and then I have to do it. So to me, it doesn't feel so much like, it's time to go to work. I'm making myself write. To me, it feels like I don't have a choice. This is what I have to do, and if I'm not doing it, I don't feel good. So it's more of a real need to do it than that I'm so disciplined. I can tell you many things that I'm not disciplined about, like, you know, housework, for instance, or, you know, many things that I'm not great about. But this is something I'm passionate about, so I do it. And I think, you get into a habit. You just, you know, if you sit down and do it every morning, that's what you expect to do. Your brain is just trained to do it. And I've developed habits along the way, and I've also had great editors who have taught me how to go back over the work and ask the hard questions of it, and I'm used to that. I'm used to now, you know, finishing a book and then turning it in and then, you know, getting the editorial letter. I'm used to, like, okay, you have to go back into it. So it's a lot of work, but it's for me it's something that I just have to do. So I might as well just get to work on it.
Let me ask you something. Is Maggie creative also in her own way?
She is. she's a visual artist and a writer as well. And I did not plan to do that, but she grew up with, you know, hearing me talk, telling stories, and we talk about plot. We watch television shows together, and we would then, you know, talk about take them apart and talk about the stories. So she just grew up with that. She has a whole other element of being an artist, a visual artist, that I do not have. That I so love watching her do. But she, yeah, she's totally a creative person as well.
Well, that's definitely in the DNA then. That's definitely in the DNA. May we please talk about the Night Visitors? And will you let's talk about this book. Will you tell us a little bit about this story? And
I
how
will.
It came to you, please.
I will. So the Night Visitors, set in the Catskills, which is just across the river. Really, it starts with a young woman named Alice is on a bus with a 10-year-old boy named Oren, and they're heading into the Catskills. It's snowing. We know that they are running from something. Something bad has happened and that they are fleeing. We don't know exactly what. She stops at a bus station, and she needs to get help. And she calls a crisis hotline. It's called Sanctuary. Oren finds this number for her. And she calls and asks for help. And they tell her to go to this town, Delphi. So she is on the road going there. And then we switch to the woman who gets the call in the night, Maddie, who finds out that this woman and boy are fleeing a domestic violence situation. They're on the road. And she has to go pick them up at a bus station. And she goes out in the snowstorm to pick them up. She's supposed to take them to the shelter, but she does. The boy says to her, "It's snowing so hard. Your house is closer than the shelter. Won't you take us home with you?" And it's totally against protocol, against her better judgment, but she does. And so that's what the story is these three people who end up in this house in the middle of a snowstorm in the Catskills. And lots of things are going to happen.
Where in the world do you have these story ideas? You know, where do they come from you? I don't mean necessarily your inspiration, but do you like write down on scraps of paper ideas and then kind of toss them all out on your desk and say, yes, yes, no, 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 yes. You know, I'm not sure.
Yeah. And sometimes it's like that. Sometimes it's like, oh, I could write a book about this or that. But in fact, this book, really, if you don't mind, I'll just talk a little bit about how this book came to be.
Yes, please.
This had a very specific origin. They don't always, but this one had a really specific origin. And it was a tough thing. A student of mine came to me and to ask for a paper extension, and she told me that she had fled an abusive marriage and that she was living with her two children, trying to make ends meet, and, you know, that it was really rough. So first of all, I definitely gave her the extension. And then, but I felt like, you know, how could I help this woman? I was so touched by this, and it's something that I had dealt with in my life. I had left a difficult marriage when my daughter was two, and I had been on my own, but I had had family to go to. I was very sensitive to the idea of, you know, what if you didn't have family to go to? What if
Right.
you were a woman who had to leave and you have a child? Where do you go? So first thing I did was I asked around my colleagues, how could I help this woman? Who could help her? And I found out about this incredible place up here in Ulster County called Family of Woodstock, and it's an organization that runs a crisis hotline and a domestic violence shelter and homeless shelters. They do so many amazing things. And I told my student about them. Someone had already told her about it. So she had already gone to family, and they had, she said they were great. They had helped her get Section 8 housing. They had helped her find a job. They were offering her counseling. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. Good. You know, so I felt really hopeful for her. And I thought, you know, this really means a lot to me. I suddenly knew that I wanted to write about not my student, but just I wanted to write about a woman who was in that situation. And I also felt like I wanted to go volunteer at this place, family. And so I did. I didn't do it right away. I said to myself, I'm going to volunteer for that place when I have the time. And I might never have done it, but all of a sudden in November of 2016, a certain day arrived, and I decided now is the time, and I called up, and they said, what are you doing now? And I went right over there, and I signed up for the crisis hotline training. So I did that, I wrote the book as I was waiting to do the training. I finished most of the book before I ever started doing volunteering there, but doing that training and working there gave me the background for knowing where my character Maddie, who gets the phone call, who she was,
right,
and how she would operate. Of course, she would never have done what Maddie, you're never supposed to take somebody home like that. But I also felt like Maddie made, so this had a very particular origin, and and I feel very fortunate for that, and I feel also very passionate about the fact that, you know, this is, the book addresses an issue that I think is really serious and needs more attention.
Absolutely. I want to, first of all, thank you for volunteering. I am a survivor and also a volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
And I have taken families into my home. So I will say I can relate to Maddie very much. But it felt so authentic to me while you were kind of peeling the onion on the story. I really enjoyed how these characters were developed. And so I wanted to just tell you how wonderful I thought the book was. And even more so now that I know the story behind it. Terrific. Are you touring with this book, Carol?
Well, not very far afield. I am doing a few appearances here in the Hudson Valley, and I just had my launch last night in Rhinebeck on the 28th, April, that's the month that's coming, 28th, I'm going to appear in Woodstock, the town that family is, and actually that's going to be a fundraiser for Family of Woodstock.
Oh, wonderful.
I'm real excited about that. And New York City Mysterious Bookshop on April 17th. And then other than that, I'm really, doing some blogs and talking to, I'd say people like you, but you are so thorough and so responsive that I hope I talk to more people like you.
Oh, thank you. Aren't you kind? Thank you. Well, I'm very blessed. I get to speak to people like you who make it such a pleasure. I want to ask you, do you think that you'll ever go back into writing fantasy and maybe an adult fantasy story? Or are you kind of on a path right now that feels good and you want to stay there rather than shift again?
A little bit of both. I mean, really, because I feel right now that I've the psychological suspense feels very, very timely and important to me.
Yes.
Right now. I feel like I'm able to do a little bit of, like, there's a little bit of a ghost story in The Night Visitor. So I think I've been able to incorporate a little bit of otherworldliness into the psychological suspense. So right now, I do feel like that is where I'm exploring. But I never, I love fantasy. I love young adult books. And if at some point that's the story that, I feel I have to write, that's what I'll do. And I might, even think of some other science fiction. I don't know. There might be some other field that I'm inspired to write.
Well, that was my next question. Do you feel like you ever want to write totally outside the genres you've already visited and maybe go horror or supernatural completely or maybe something else, whatever inspires you? Are you interested at all in romance on a larger scale, maybe a romantic suspense.
Yeah, I always like to have a little bit of romance in my books. So I don't know if it would be that I would go towards like strictly romance, but I always enjoy like having an element of romance in the book. And I love historical books. So it's possible that I really love all genres, and I read a lot of different kind of books when I'm teaching.
Right.
So sometimes I'll read a great science fiction book with my students, and I'll suddenly think like, ooh, that would be kind of fun to write something like that. I have been thinking of maybe a dystopian science fiction.
One of my favorites too. I love that.
Yeah.
Remember to tag me when you write that so I can read it immediately.
You'll be the first to hear.
Thank you. Listen, Carol, would you please tell listeners where they can find you on the webs and in social media, please?
CarolGoodman.com is my website. Pretty simple.
And it's beautiful, by the way. Let me just say, easy to maneuver around. Lots of really interesting things on there. I love the fact that you have your pen names up there also. So it's a really wonderful, wonderful website. And it's lovely, too. Very simple, which I like.
My designer who lives across the river, Nan Tepper, I will shout out to her and tell her that you said so. Yeah, I do enjoy it as well.
I was going to say the reason I like it so much is there are some pages I go to and there's, you know, so much going on that you can't sort through it and just get to the basics. And I think through my research, I found that most people who look at websites don't want all the bells and whistles. I mean, obviously, if you're a singer, you know, that's different. But an author who has, you know, too much going on and it's visually overstimulating or audio, you know, auditorially overstimulating. But it's a lovely site. And readers and listeners, I encourage you to go and check it out. Carol's writing, just talking about her life and her storytelling, is lovely. So I think you would enjoy it very much.
Well, thank you, Pam. This has been such an amazing conversation. It's wonderful to talk to somebody who is so sensitive to the written word.
Oh, thank you so much, Carol. Please promise you'll come back. And I'll tell you what, how about this? And I do this to just people I love talking to. Will you come back and be a guest host and pick an author you like to interview?
Ooh, I would love to do that. What a lovely idea. I immediately, several people pop into my head. But yes, thank you.
Please, let's
exciting.
Do that. Let's plan that. And then you can add talk show host to your lengthy resume and talk to your students about that as well. I'd love to have you back. You and I are going to talk about that. In the meantime, thank you so much for such a beautiful book. The Night Visitors is available in brick and mortar and on your favorite online. Please go and get the book. And remember, leave a review, even if it's one sentence. Every little bit helps the author. Carol Goodman, author, award-winning author, thank you for being with me today on Authors on the Air.
Oh, Pam, it has been such a delight. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And I want to thank you, listeners. Have a great night. And thank you, Mom and Dad. I'll see you later. Bye-bye. Authors on the Air, everyone. I'm Pam Stack, your host. We are proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network.